Perched at the nexus of downtown Grand Junction and the Colorado River, the Western Colorado Botanical Garden stands today as a testament to local visionary Elizabeth Harris, who pursued its creation with dogged determination as a conduit through the past, present, and future of our local economy. Despite undoubtedly rocky beginnings, the gardens remain as a cornerstone of cultural life here, welcoming a new age of sustainable riverfront development, leveraging the beauty and recreational potential of the Colorado, and making it a centerpiece of the community, as Elizabeth and her cohorts imagined it should be. Elizabeth Harris passed away at age 101 before we were able to interview her for this episode. I recently visited with two of her four surviving children, Sue and John Harris, to reflect back on a life well lived and an enduring spirit whose legacy of community enhancement will grace Grand Junction for generations to come. Welcome to the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West, the continental in between. Crossing the Divide elevates local voices to foster cooperative engagement in overcoming the unique challenges of life west of the Continental Divide. I'm Gretchen Reist, your guide over the divide and into the diverse terrain of Western Colorado.
Mom was born near Choteau in Montana, and her father worked on a sheep ranch. His name was Clem, and her mother was Anna. She was one of six kids. She was in the middle. And she was last to survive all six of them when she just passed away a couple weeks ago. She worked hard. At one point, we all were encouraging her to write a history, and she was taking a class at Mesa State, but she started having nightmares because it brought up all these memories, and she said there were so many hard memories, especially around the Depression. Her mom made, their last name was Bowers, and her grandmother started a company, Bowers Better Butter, and that's what got them through the Depression. But she remembers a lot of hard times. She remembers going some of the fun things. She rode a bicycle to work or to school, and she always thought her ankles were fat. And she said her ankles were fat because she rode her bicycle to school. And I said, well, how did you get that bicycle? And she said, I got that bicycle because it was my turn to check the beaver traps, and there was a beaver in a trap. So she took care of the beaver, and she got the money from the skin, and that's how she got her bicycle. That's one of the more fun stories. And she had terrible scoliosis, and she told me that that was because a horse ran away with her one time, and she fell off because she hit a tree branch, and that's what made her back crooked. I mean, she had these really kind of funny things that she would say, but she just said it was just a very hard life, just a lot of work all the time. And at one point I said to her, I wish we could have lived in Montana, and she said it was too cold. She just didn't want to live in that cold anymore. Well, she was working in Yellowstone National Park. She was the hostess in the Yellowstone Lodge, and my father was, they were both college students at that point, and my dad was a seasonal worker there too, and so they met and they eloped. Right, and then they moved to Arkansas. He was from Arkansas. They lived there for a while. She really did not like Arkansas. And then they moved back here, and he was in the lumber business at that point, taking lumber off of Grand Mesa. She loved being in Western Colorado.
Yeah, I think sawmills were from Arkansas. That's what Dad's family did. And so when they got married, that's where they moved. And about 1944, 45, we moved to Grand Junction. But before that, we'd had sawmills on top of Grand Mesa. In those days, it was legal to cut timber up there. We'd live up there in the summertime. And the way I remember it, our first house is on 444 North 11th Street. The house is still there. It's a tilted house. You can put a marble on the floor and it'll roll to the north wall and bounce back. But that house is still there. So that's where we lived to start with. When we weren't at the mill, we lived there. And then they would haul timber and lumber down from the mill. And I remember the lumber trucks being parked in front of that house. Sawmilling was a big deal in our life at that point.
I'm not sure what drove her interest in politics. I know that Her parents were both very bright, and her father, she talks about stories about when it was time to eat dinner, how Anna would say to Clem, would you please get your books off the table? So it sounds, it seemed like Grandfather Bowers was very, very, you know, booky. And I don't know if it's maybe from the parents, maybe that she got a little bit in the very beginning. But she always felt like she, you know, they were always just scraping by and working really hard. But she wishes, I think she had wished that she could have had more financial backing so that she could go do the schooling that she really wanted to do. When she was in utero, so she was born in 1918, her mother's watch was marching for the women's right to vote. So in the latest election, Mom was very much a Clinton supporter. And so much of it for me and for Mom and for these people in our lives, it was like this needed to happen for Mom so that it could come full circle for her, having, you know, been in utero and then seeing the first woman become president. Would have been a wonderful story. When I was in grade school, she was a stenographer, and she worked in a little building down in just off of Main Street, 7th and Main here there. And she was renting a room out from a realtor, Bill Bennett. And she started just liking what he was doing, and she just started studying, and then she became a realtor. And then, you know, years went by, and then she had her own business. She was always trying to do something else. And then she was she started the 4-H dog training program. So she just was always thinking of something else to do and to create. So right up into the end, she did the Colorado Books on Tape program for people who can't read anymore. And so what were the books she liked? They were all the nonfiction, you know, the historical. I mean, it was just, you know, and that speaks to her with the Western Colorado Heritage Garden. That's her history that she loves so much. So Mom always loved plants. Growing up, we were always planting plants, you know. So she always loved plants. And I remember a trip I took, she met me down in Tucson, and we went to the Tucson Desert Sonora Museum. And it was at that point that she was talking about Grand Junction's botanical gardens. And I think she was just kind of thinking about it at that point. There's a story of when she was driving and she looked down and she saw the flower. I mean, that's literally what she did. And I said, I remember when I wasn't living here at the time. And I remember we were talking about it. And so I loved that Sonora Museum so much, that desert setting. I thought it was much more beautiful than being on the river, but that was just my taste because I'd been there. And she just really just shut me down. No, it has to be on the river. We need to start, you know, having that river be the centerpiece of our city, because that's what it should be. And she wanted to see it cleaned up. And so it was a combination of plants and just wanting to beautify. And as a realtor, I mean, she was passionate about being a realtor. She wanted to see every young couple have a home. I mean, it was just, she had this, she was just driven. And she made it, you know, this wonderful livelihood for herself, you know. And then she just was doing very well. She did so well for herself. I think part of it was that I think she was just born to be that way. I mean, she worked all the time. I mean, we didn't go on trips. I mean, she was working all the time. You know, and every Saturday morning we're cleaning house and she's going out and having open homes. And that's just what she did, and she liked it. Yeah, she was the first woman to be the president of the Board of Realtors in Grand Junction, which seems like nothing now. It seems like nothing. But in the 70s, it was huge.
That's the way she was, and that's the way she raised her kids, too. And we're not all just like her, but she taught us how to work, and she taught us that when you were tired, you just didn't quit. If there was still work to do, you kept going until it got done. So if you started a job, you finished it. And so that's kind of what drove her. She was going to get it done.
I think at that point, the Fifth Street Bridge was the old Fifth Street Bridge. It was the old bridge before they did this new one. So it was the old-fashioned bridge with the girders over the top. But yeah, just looking down to the east off of that, yeah, that's where she envisioned it, and then envisioned it connecting to the city. That's where she wanted it, just right there. She just had this vision of flowers being there. She was always just so community-minded and just wanting the community to be stronger. She was like a big proponent of the river trail. You know, when people are, oh, we don't need a river trail. You know, why do we need a river trail? Well, it brings quality. It was about bringing quality to our community and cleaning up the river. All of those things together to bring that passion to doing that. She was down there all the time working. And then I think at that point, she was really working with Brian Mahoney too. I think they're working together on trying to get that all cleaned up. And I remember a lot of talk about the Army Corps of Engineers with flooding and the city and how to all work together. All this complicated working together of all these different entities to make it happen. Mom's vision was to have a children's garden area, but it was to have like a Western Colorado, like old home, like an adobe-ish or a log cabin type of thing with a magical children's garden around it. That was what she was hoping would happen, but that was her vision at that time for at least the children's part of the garden. And just the plants. And she was out there marking all those plants along Watson Island and going along the riverfront towards the Fifth Street Bridge. That was another project. I mean, she was always down there. So with the Heritage Garden, I mean, she went to all these different people, you know, like the Frank Dunn Company. There's that sign down there. There were the orchard people that she spoke with. I mean, it was the farmers. I mean, she spoke with all these people and got involved and got whatever she could from people to put in that garden as a history of Western Colorado, not only in what the economy was, the economic history and background of Western Colorado is in that garden down there. I mean, you know, for school children and historians, I mean, it's just amazing. And she has the plants down there, too, to go along with it, you know, to support what it was that was going on at that time with each of those, you know, I don't know what you'd call them, they're not really industries, but the different segments of what drove Western Colorado at that point. So it's an amazing garden.
Yeah, sugar beets probably was the best farm crop for the farmers here, other than the Palisade fruit area, for a long time. And the farmers that grew beets did well. I mean, they had nice looking houses, new trucks, new tractors. They were pretty well off. They had to work hard, but they made money. And so sugar beets was a big deal for this valley for a long time. When I was a kid growing up, it was, I loved to watch the sugar beets being hauled every year. And so that was a big deal, the sugar beet factory was in Delta, and when they closed that down, that ended the sugar beet farming here. But for a long time, it was a big deal, and so Mom wanted to find some seeds to grow sugar beets. And I know a couple times they planted them out there, and I'm not sure what happened, but maybe they didn't get watered enough, but I think they failed to grow. But so that's something that, you know, I think she would probably want somebody to follow up on and see that it gets done. And that's part of the Heritage Garden.
Everything she did, like with the, being like the sugar beets, she did all this research. And like she got so into barbed wire. She had all these different types of barbed wire. She knew all about barbed wire. So it wasn't just that she did these things just on a whim or just put, you know, this small bit of energy to it. It's like she went overboard. And so she had all this knowledge about what she was doing. Which, you know, I think it really shows in the garden down there. All the time, it was writing these grants and trying to get more money and getting as much from the city as she could and from GOCO and all these different entities that she was writing these grants. I mean, it was a monetarily difficult situation, it seemed like, the whole time. It was always a struggle, it seemed like. She and those two other women that John mentioned, Norma Gobo and, you know, we're both forgetting the other name, but
Mrs. Gore.
Mrs. Gore, Shirley Gore.
Shirley Gore, yeah.
You know, there's a letter written from all three of them proposing a Columbine garden down at the Botanical Gardens. And that is dated January of 2019. I mean, she just never quit. Well, and I think as she aged, she had more time. So then her mind was just thinking of more things to do. And I think it was very, very difficult for her that she couldn't do more. So I've heard from many people that they go, oh no, here comes E.B. Harris hitting us up again. She just had no fear in asking people to help out financially because she believed in it so much. It was a natural for her. I could never do what she did, but it was just natural to her. And people would give. She had the salesmanship, right? And the passion. Yeah. You know, the passion, I think, is what really makes a good salesman or salesperson. Yeah.
She was not afraid to get in anybody's face and talk about what she believed. She had a lot of guts, and so it took a lot of guts to get that botanical garden going. And she had two friends who helped her, Mrs. Goble and Mrs. Gore, and those ladies just kind of bowed their neck and made it happen. So
I think it's always good to end on it. Mom's big quote when we were having dinner with other people, and she said, well, you're not talking sex or politics, so I'm leaving.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. Access our full lineup of conversations with Western Slope Voices by searching Crossing the Divide on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and Spotify. Hit subscribe to stay plugged in to each new episode. Follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook and Instagram to keep up on podcast releases and access exclusive video and photography. Crossing the Divide, cultivating community through conversation.